Blog Talk Radio.
Episode. I've been using the house phone to do the show with, to do my call-in, and I turned it off. I guess it didn't close. I didn't hit it twice, I guess, like you're supposed to, and it played for some time before I came in, and I was like, oh, no. So I apologize if you heard that. Numbers should be higher. I know they should be, because I know people are listening, and I had someone call in yesterday. So I don't know what's going on. I'm sure it'll catch up. It sometimes does that. I'm not too worried about numbers right now. So today we're going to do something that I don't normally do, and I probably should, especially with the ongoing trend with most of the countries. Now, I'm being listened to in several countries, including Iraq. So I'm going to do some news in these places, and I want to see what's going on around the world, and it looks like some of the same things that are happening here are happening in a lot of other places. But in some of these places, everybody's rising up and making blockades. The roads are blocked. No one can go anywhere. No one's going to work. People are not, they're not in their homes either. They're fucking out protesting. So I think as far as Americans, we have a lot to learn from these folks, because people are too stupid to do anything about anything. They believe whatever they are told, and it's sad. But you know what? That's America. That's American education, and you know what? Sounds about right. So anyhow, we're going to get this thing kicked off. We're going to start with Lithuania. I don't know how I ended up in Lithuania, but I did. So, right now they're saying that tiny Lithuania has outsized role in the EU. The Belarus crisis. So these are top stories over here. Now, I haven't been paying attention to the world that much because, I mean, they keep us pretty busy over here. Just having to deal with the crap that he says all the time. Oh, my God, what a moron. So right now, it's a really small country by European Union measures, but it's playing an outsized role as protesters in neighboring Belarus face a brutal law enforcement crackdown following a presidential election they say was rigged. That sounds a lot like America, except only some of us are smart enough and willing to put themselves on the line to fight. So the EU's foreign ministers meet Friday to discuss the crisis, the Lithuanian government's strong pro-democracy voice rooted in decades of resisting Soviet control also serves as a reminder of the bloke's uneven response so far. Lithuania has given refuge to Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya. I hope I said that right. I'll speak Russian. The main opposition challenger in Sunday's disputed election, this Belarusian president, Alexander, check out this last name, Lukashenko, that was easier than the last one at least, claims to have won the 80% of the vote after 26 years of authoritarian rule. I'm sorry, but no. why is anyone ruling any place for that long? I don't know why we have career politicians who just stay in forever. What do you fucking do? A lot of these people don't actually do anything. They don't do anything. And we pay them, and they make more than us. They get more than us. They vacation more than us, and they get fucking free health care and a lifetime pension. How fair is that? Belarus's northern neighbor is also ready and considering the possibility of accepting Belarusians' suffering from the ongoing brutalities. On a humanitarian ground, Lithuanian Foreign Minister Linas Linkevicius, I think that says, that's a little bit better, tweeted on Wednesday, I gotta follow this person on Twitter. I'm gonna start following the countries that listen to my show. The EU meeting Friday, he called for a special session of the UN's Human Rights Council, sanctions against individuals for use of excessive force and election fraud, and the establishment of an EU fund for victims of repression. Trump would never do anything like this. With nearly 7,000 people detained and scores injured, the fierceness and scope of the police response to post-election protests was extraordinary, even for Lukashenko's long, iron-fisted tenure. The 65-year-old former state farm director, really? What? I'm sorry. What? He's a 65-year-old former State Farm director. He's been in power since 1994 and was nicknamed Europe's last dictator. Apologies. In the West for his suppression of dissent. I'm sorry. I've never even. I don't know everything that's true. No, if anyone thinks that they do, they're dumb. But you know why we don't know anything? Because we don't pay attention. I think that's what social media is actually for, so we don't pay attention. And I started doing something different with my social media because I got tired of being, you know, just sitting here silent and allowing all this shit to happen. You know, you have a right to say something. It's your right as American. Shit, it's your right as a what are they called? Belarusian, okay, and a Lithuanian. Anybody. It is your job as a citizen of your country to stand up against this type of shit. Now, Lithuania's support is long-standing, and Lithuania's capital, Vilnius, is located just 170 kilometers from Minsk, the capital of Belarus, and already has become a center for Belarusians in exile. I wish that someone would accept us. Me and my family would love to leave and go to any country that's not like ours and is better. We would be so happy. Let's see. The city host university that Lukashenko banned, a number of Belarusian non-governmental organizations have relocated there. The rights of citizens in Belarus matter so much to the people of the small Baltic nation, with a population of 2.8 million, is rooted in the Lithuania's history. Now, these are people I could stand behind. This is exemplary, really. The country was the first former Soviet republic to declare its independence. After that historic step in 1990, Lithuania embraced democracy, joined NATO and the European Union, and then turned to promoting democracy abroad as well. My question is, are they promoting democracy abroad like the United States? Are they lining up coups and falsifying information to go into places to steal their shit, knock down buildings, and kill a bunch of people to spread them, you know, American, air quotations, democracy? Probably not. This is interesting. I'm interested in this, yes. Now, many Lithuanians remember how the members of the Lithuanian diaspora supported the independence movements back home felt a special responsibility to help those with similar aspirations elsewhere in Eastern Europe, particularly Ukraine and Belarus. In international forums, Lithuanian officials have often promoted issues of democracy in those two countries. Having this historical experience, we believe it's necessary to support people in Belarus and Ukraine who want to support democracy in their country. Wow. The Institute of International Relations and Political Science at Vilnius University became a part of Lithuanian identity to be a beacon of democracy and a regional leader in democracy promotion. That's pretty insane. Other countries in the region with communist-era memories of corrupt and authoritarian leaders also have spoken out on behalf of the anti-government protesters, contesting that Lukashenko fairly won re-election to a sixth term. Slovenian Prime Minister Janez Janša said Thursday his government was trying to create pressure on Lukashenko to agree to repeat the election under the strong watch of international election observers, saying it would be the only peaceful solution to the current crisis. Could we do that with Trump? I think it's fucking years too late, but seriously, a lot of crazy shit's going on over here. Holy fuck, but you need to read between the lines. This is like the worst show I've ever been featured in. Let's see. Like Lithuania, Poland, an EU member since 2004 that also borders Belarus, has also long been a proponent of democratic change in its autocratic neighbor. The Polish government for years has funded a satellite TV channel, Belsat, that broadcasts news into Belarus as an alternative to government propaganda. That's awesome. So, lots going on, and I'm sure there's lots more news here, but we've got more countries to go into. But as you can see, as we go along, we're going to see some trends. In Slovakia, over one-third of Slovaks are looking for a new job. Let's see. Slovakia is going to expel three Russian diplomats over a Berlin murder. Let's see what the tea is on this. They're going to expel the three staff from the Russian embassy in the capital of Bratislava, with the local media reporting it is related to the murder of a Georgian man in Berlin last year. Authorities cited the abuse of Slovak visas as reason for the expulsions. Germany has accused Russia of ordering the murder of the former Chechen rebel, Zelim Khan Kangushivili? I hope so. I don't know. I'm sorry if I fucking botched your name, dude. May you rest in peace, sir. Rest in power. The 40-year-old was shot dead in broad daylight last August in Berlin's Kleiner Tiergarten Park. Russian national identified as Vadim K. has been charged with murder. I'm sure. Now, why are they being expelled? According to the information from the Slovak intelligence services, their activities were in contradiction with the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. On top of that, there had been an abuse of visas issued to the Slovak General Consulate in St. Petersburg, and that this is a connection to serious crime was committed on the territory of another EU and NATO member state. It's like we're in a fucking movie. So local media, as well as investigative website bellingcat.com, we'll be checking that out, have reported that one of those suspected of planning the murder have traveled to the EU on Slovak visa. All three must leave the country by the 13th. Wow. And there's so much more going on here. Porsche plans a new plant for car bodies in Slovakia. What? With 1.1 million vehicles. There's a lot going on. Lots of murder. Russia's very busy. Let's see. We are in, I hope it's A, right? Czech Republic? Let's see. Oh, wow. There is crazy shit going on right now. Top diplomat warns China. Why is Pompeo even? Let's. I want to check this out. Why is he doing? Why is he anything anywhere? I fucking hate this. Fucking country sucks. He's warning of China and Russia authoritarianism. All right. He's calling upon the young democracies of Central and Eastern Europe to embrace their hard-won freedoms as they face the threats from Russia and China. He told the Czech Senate on Wednesday that they are right to resist in Chinese attempts to assert economic and political leverage on them for supporting Taiwan. Really? You know, when we order stuff, we get stuff from China. I hate this. We vote with our dollars, and that means even across the border. So if we stop supporting China, what would happen? Do you think that would make a fucking dent right now? Now, with coronavirus in places right now, there is a shit ton going on. We've got waves already hitting again. We're about to get a second wave, and we are not done with the first. Things are just getting started, and 2020 is just about to start getting worse than it was before. And we're in August, people. We're in 8 months into 2020. We got less than 90 days to defeat the orange piece of shit in office. I don't know if we will, but holy fuck, a lot of shit's going down here. Wow. They're looking for they're in a political situation over here. And in Germany news, we've got women in Germany do not feel safe in the large cities. Wild boar who stole Germans' nudist clothes will be cold. Why are you killing them? It's the people's fault. Germany is declaring most of Spain at-risk area for coronavirus. They're warning their people. Let's see what's happening there. They don't want people to travel to Spain. Basically, the Health and Interior Ministries have agreed that Spain, excluding the Canary Islands, is now a high-risk area due to the surge in cases. Now, I wonder why. When you see a surge in cases in countries, you need to look at their leaders. New Zealand was doing fairly well. In fact, they have their second wave now. And only, I think it was like 11 cases were found. So they shut down the entire country and everyone has to stay inside again. You know, bravo to you. Bravo to you. Because if we would have done that the first time, we'd probably have a lot less people dead. Let's see. Canary Islands lie on the coast of North Africa. They're exempted from this travel ban. Now, the travelers returning from high-risk areas would be required to undergo testing and wait for the result in self-isolation, which would last up to 2 weeks. The decision was made in a coordination between Germany's interior, foreign, and health ministries, which was reported by several news agencies and German media on Friday. So, foreign ministry later updated its travel advice to include the warning, the at-risk label is not a closing of borders, and it's not a ban on travel. However, it is a be careful and don't travel to certain places if you can. They've been seeing over in Spain thousands of new cases per day, but the numbers have so far remained low in the Balearic region. So, with the coronavirus infection surging in France, health authorities have declared Paris and coastal metropolis of Marseille at risk zones. So, senior health officials Jerome Solomon warned that the situation is deteriorating week to week in the country. Speaking on France's NTR radio, Solomon said clusters emerge every day following family reunions, big parties, and similar events during summer holidays. He also warned that there were more and more people arriving in hospitals, and the authorities needed to react. The United Kingdom said on Thursday it will reimpose a mandatory 2-week quarantine on travelers arriving in the country from France or the Netherlands, Monaco, and Malta, as well as the Caribbean islands of Turks and Aruba. Also join the travel quarantine list. How do you say that? C CAICO, so I've never, honestly, never heard of this. And it would be dumb of me to try and pronounce this without looking it up. I've tried to pronounce other stuff. What is this? How do you say? The Caicos? The Turks and the Caicos are an archipelago, they're coral islands. I never heard of them, honestly. So I hope. They get their name from a cactus. Turk's head cactus in Caicos is the Lucayan term for Cayahico, meaning string of islands. How do you pronounce it? Like, seriously, how do you fucking say that shit? It doesn't even say. Pronounce it, bitch. Yeah. Motherfucker, how do you say that shit? No, we don't want to see a video of it. I just want to see words. Give me letters. Okay, it's Caicos. We're going to call it that. That's what we're calling it. So anyhow, let's see. The Secretary of State for Transport, Grant Shapps, wrote on his official Twitter account that it will go into effect at 4 p.m. local time Saturday. I think it might be 4 a.m. More than 500,000 Britons are holidaying in France, and the announcement is likely to lead many to cut their trips short. Why the fuck are you holidaying during an epidemic? Francis, your fucking leader sucks too. The UK leader is like a fucking European Trump douchebag. Fuck that guy. He's also doing a bad job. So y'all are dumb. Settlers came from the UK, didn't they? So anyhow, sounds about right. Let's see. The British decision to allow people to holiday will cause them to regret their decision and will lead to reciprocal measures. The Americas, the presumptive U.S. Democratic nominee, former VP Joe Biden, has called for a nationwide mask mandate to curb the coronavirus outbreak. Let's institute a mask mandate nationwide starting immediately, and we will save lives, adding that the plan could save more than 40,000 lives over the next 3 months. Douchebag dumbfuck resisted the idea, saying it was playing politics with the virus. No, he has played politics with the virus. And he's a piece of shit who has caused over 160,000 people to die. Peru has passed 500,000 coronavirus cases and recorded more than 25,600 deaths. Now, the country has the worst death rate in Latin America with 78.6 deaths per 100,000 people. In Asia, two cities in China found traces of the coronavirus and imported frozen food from Brazil and Ecuador. Viruses can survive at temperatures up to minus 20 degrees Celsius for up to 2 years, but experts have said that little risk of getting sick from food. Well, people should not fear food packaging, or delivery of food, but we wash our stuff. When we have it delivered to our car, we take it home and we wash everything because it can appear on your stuff. Because if someone goes to the store, whether they wear a mask or not, if they're asymptomatic, they won't know that they have corona. So if they touch something, put it back. You touch something, put it back, yada, yada. Let's see. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un lifted a lockdown in Kaesong, a major city near the South Korean border where thousands were quarantined over coronavirus fears. Kim insisted during a ruling party meeting the country will keep its borders shut and reject any outside help from the stem. To stem the virus, wow. Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Thursday that it began a continent-wide study of antibodies against the virus. Now, they hit 1 million cases marked last week with more than 24,000 deaths recorded. Health experts are concerned the figures are higher. What is important is fewer people are coming down with the disease. How many people are infected and asymptomatic on our continent? That's a question because they don't know. Some believe that the relative youth of Africa's population, which has a median age of 19, might be keeping the numbers down. Now, Oceania, New Zealand's first known community outbreak in more than 3 months, jumped to 17. The number of infections is expected to increase. Now, health officials were still trying to determine where the virus came from, but the new local outbreak, there is no locally transmitted cases in 102 days. So the health officials also expanded the lockdown of Auckland and the country's largest to August 26. In Australia, there were fewer new infections in Victoria, but the leader urged continued vigilance against the spread amid the second outbreak. The latest reports from the state of Victoria showed 14 more deaths and 372 new infections on Friday, coming from a Melbourne outbreak. This marks a significant jump from Thursday when 278 infections and 8 deaths were reported. But then you look at our country and we're just, yeah, pretty fucked. So in Denmark, they're introducing travel restrictions for Belgium. Denmark's frozen holiday pay. They're trying to explain how that works. That's interesting. Frozen holiday pay. They're trying to get their numbers down to 20. The number would drop 20 new infections per 100,000 people. That's what they're trying to do. And once it does, they will lift the ban. Denmark. Yeah, people in Denmark listening to this show is interesting. Now, the economy is suffering a historic GDP drop in second quarter, and their weather is getting much hotter, which is causing more tropical nights, which is odd for them. Coronavirus roundup, unresolved phase 4, expected to continue. They're going to be talking about it until Friday. And Denmark is testing thousands for antibodies. Their former SSI boss, new Russian coronavirus vaccine, likely to come to Denmark. Now, I just don't know about a Russian vaccine, about using it at all. I don't know. Right now, their Danish unemployment at lowest level since March. That's nice. In Belgium, let's see. We already got our coronavirus updates right now. Now, quarantine won't help Boris Johnson, even if it is the right thing to do. Now, they're imposing a 14-day quarantine on people traveling from Leicester. Shit, women in Congo taken from their mothers by Belgium now want justice. That's nice. Go get it. Belgian king expresses regrets over nation's colonial past in Congo. Was that the, I want to say, what was his name? Fuck, the king of Belgium expressed his deepest regrets for the violence and suffering inflicted during the Belgian rule over what is now the Democratic Republic of Congo. Man, what happened to them people? Oh, my God. The African country marked 60 years since it gained independence. Oh, man. In a letter written to Felix, I'm going to fuck this up. Tshisekedi, the president of the DRC, the King Philippe became the first reigning Belgian monarch to acknowledge that acts of violence and cruelty had been committed in suffering and humiliation caused under the country's colonial rule. To further strengthen our ties and develop an even more fruitful friendship, we must be able to talk to each other about our long common history and all the truth and serenity. That's very interesting. The letter came as Belgium faced growing calls to reassess its colonial history after a wave of global protest against racial inequality, which was sparked by the death of George Floyd in the U.S. last month. Sir, you were slain for no real reason, but you did not die in vain. You woke up a sleeping giant. Now, several statues of King Leopold, yeah, that's who I was thinking of, King Leopold, you know, they made them dig up rubber and all kinds of shit, and when they didn't meet their quotas and stuff like that, and when they didn't pick their crops for the white men, they would cut up their family members and leave them with, like, severed hands and feet, and that's all they would get. Fucking white people. God. Spaniards, too, and got shit to be proud of. So, anyway, now, under King Leopold II, under whose rule as many as 10 million Congolese people are thought to have died, have been vandalized in recent weeks, while a petition calling for the removal of all statues of the former king has received more than 80,000 signatures. The country's reckoning with its past, local authorities in the city of Ghent are set to remove a bust of Leopold on Tuesday. See, this is what I'm talking about. We're seeing trends all over the world. Now, Algerian news over here. Algerians increasingly are nervous over their country's cash shortage. They are having, you know, they're telling us we can't fucking print penny or make print. We can't make pennies. Bullshit. I call bullshit. Now, they're calling for an international mobilization to release the journalist Khalid Drarini. Here's some corruption. Journalism is important, and it's something my uncle did, and, you know, they don't make a ton of money, and they put their asses on the line. Let's see. His lawyers and supporters launched a call on Wednesday for international mobilization. He has become a symbol for the struggle for freedom of the press in Algeria after being sentenced to 3 years in prison for undermining national unity. Yeah, I would say the citizens, elites, and all journalists, wherever they are inside and outside the country, we must take action to prevent these practices and to confront the authorities that do the opposite of what they say. Yeah. So the president of the Union for Change and Progress is pretty much handling this event here. Drarini, who is 40, is the director of the Kashba Tribune and the correspondent of the French TV5 Monde channel and Reporters Without Borders in Algeria. He has been held in temporary detention since the 29th of March and was sentenced to 3 years in prison and fined for inciting an unarmed gathering and undermining national unity. You know, this could very well become the United States just for saying online that we hate, you know, XYZ, Donald fucking dump. Now, in Tunisia, I hope I said that right. These are African countries, by the way. They're in disarray as boost support for populists. Entire families are arriving at their shores as COVID is driving Tunisian exodus. Italy is facing an influx of people trafficking on fishing boats, desperate to escape Tunisia's deepening economic crisis. Unsurprisingly, for a coastal town perched upon Tunisia's border with Libya, it is hot when Ahmed climbs into the back of a car outside the patrol station in Zarzis. It's clear from the outset he feels uncomfortable talking to a journalist. Nevertheless, he's here. Speaking through a translator, Ahmed explains how the loss of this year's tourist season due to the pandemic, his seasonal job in the nearby island, resorts to Djerba, has failed to materialize. Now he's saving what money he can from casual work at a local gym for the 4,000 Tunisian diners. 1,125 euros? He'll need to make the illegal crossing from Tunisia into Europe. There you can work, but you don't make money. What you earn, you consume. Before coronavirus, there were no jobs, he says, referring to the country's endemic unemployment. Now with the coronavirus, it's not going to get better. Now, departing from the points along the coast, there are the largest groups of nationals arriving in Italy. And according to figures from the Interior Ministry, testing its reception centers to limit the first 6 months of 2019, 1,277 arrivals were intercepted by Italian authorities. This year, it rose to 6,628. So you're telling me that they have been dealing with this since last year. I'm glad that we're doing this right now. In July alone, as the pandemic took hold and the waters calmed, 4,252 migrants were intercepted by Italian authorities, compared with the 502 previous year. These numbers do not include those who landed in Italy undetected. Compared with many countries so far, Tunisia's brush with COVID-19 has been light. At the time of writing, only 1,678 cases of the virus had been detected, resulting in 51 deaths. Though the threat of potential second spike looms ominously, however, for an economy still struggling to recover from the conditions that led to its 2011 revolution, the combined effect of the lockdown, the loss of its tourism season, and global economic downturn is proving devastating. Wow. Before the pandemic, the unemployment rate across Tunisia was around 16%. In some areas, such as Governorate, in which Zarzi sits, it's reached 30%. The impact of the pandemic will worsen. They're talking about the economy shrinking by 4.3%, which is the largest contraction since the country gained independence in 1956. This is going to be us, especially in Florida. Now, Uganda, a 19-year-old ICE top office. I hope it works out for you. It registered its 12th COVID-19 death. And let's see. Let's read about this guy. Now they listen to the show. Let's read about their news. Hillary Humphrey Kawisa, who completed a S.6 at Mengo SS in Kampala last year, is among the 31 people who have already picked presidential nomination forms from the Electoral Commission. Let's see. He wants to make the politics of Uganda genuine. The campaign promise of the 19-year-old who has expressed interest to contest for presidency in the 2021 general elections. Now, he is eligible to stand for presidency because he achieved the three principal passes with A level in physics, economics, and mathematics. You know, we need to do this for Trump because he wouldn't have passed. He would have had a heart attack in that chair. That would have saved us from a lot of problems. He plans to join university for the bachelor's in civil engineering after the 2021 elections. In an interview with the New Vision News on Wednesday, Kawisa confessed that only one position of leadership he has held before is being a class counselor. You know what? He's fucking getting it, man. However, he insists, I'm a good leader, of course, and I have been a big dreamer. He pledges to fight the politics of the blame game. He's a beneficiary of the 2017 presidential age limit constitutional amendments that scrapped the 75 years age gap. The eligibility for one to stand for presidency was lowered from 35 to 18 years. The aspirant hopes to raise the Shom, it says SH20M, I don't know what that means. Nomination fees, I guess that might be the fee you have to pay for well-wishers. The aspirants are required to be endorsed by at least 100 supporters per district. So I'm thinking that the SH20M, I wonder if that's a typo. I need to look. Nomination fees from well-wishers. So he has to have at least 100 supporters per district. That's pretty cool. He's saying we must rid this country of corruption and the whole system needs to be overhauled. That's what I like. So we're moving on to Iraq. Let's see. In Iraq news, Turkey says operation against PKK in Iraq to continue. Turkish strikes kill 3 Kurds in Iraq. And what the Iraq war can teach the climate movement. Let's see what we got. Now, we got a guy here who's talking about him growing up when Bush was president and everything, the war going on, and how basically it was all over oil and whole narratives were merely a cover for the U.S. politicians trying to gain control of Iraq's vast petroleum reserves. He's relieving all of that, again, as an adult. His details of the lurid history of Iraq war are gripping and a thorough account of what Colwyn and James call the greatest crime of the 21st century. This show, he's doing a podcast called Blowback, which is hosted by a journalist called Noah Colwin and former Chapo Trap House producer Brendan James. We're going to have to look into that. So it also puts the 2003 invasion in historical context and how the war shaped the U.S. oil industry and politics more broadly. And reliving 2003, it's also clear that blowback is unfortunately all too relevant today. As a climate reporter, he's writing about the U.S. government's allegiance to the oil industry all the time. He seeds about how fossil fuel executives knowingly continue to fuel the deadly climate crisis, how their operations massively harm poor communities around the U.S. and the world, and how our elected leaders prioritize oil, gas, and coal profits over the interests of the majority of people across the U.S. But, of course, oil companies' plunder isn't limited to its massive contributions to the climate crisis and pollution. The industry and the U.S.'s continued quest for energy domination. It is also built on the history of violence, of which the Iraq War is one chapter. Arthur spoke with Colwin and James about the new show, Corporate Conquest, which lessens its hold for climate movement at this pivotal moment, one that is still haunted by 2003. Now, this is an interview that is lightly edited for clarity. Now, what are you saying? What are the biggest things you can learn is that when it comes to war, when it comes to controlling natural resources, don't give them an inch or they'll take a mile. They're always building cases for why this is a good idea. There will always be a reasonable seeming argument, a soft tone argument about why we need to intervene in Venezuela, which is one of the world's largest exporters of oil, to stop a dictatorship that's threatening stability in the region or something. We need to see through that kind of thing. We need a radical break with those kinds of American politics. Shit, just a few weeks ago, temperatures in Iraq shot up to 127 degrees Fahrenheit in parts of the country because of ongoing electricity grid issues. A lot of people were forced to bear that heat with limited or no access to air conditioning. When people held protests in the street, two were killed by security forces. Blowback explains that U.S. intervention had a massive role in destabilizing Iraq's electricity, even before the 2003 invasion. You could talk about that. So who gained from that destabilization? The recent wave was brought on by thousands of people across the country into the streets, and a lot of the people worst affected by the heat wave were in the marshlands and in the southern part of Iraq. And people in the marshlands were persecuted by Saddam Hussein. The marshlands were drained to punish marsh Arabs who resisted Hussein's rule in the 90s. That's basically created climate refugees. Hot conditions have persisted in that region, and obviously now the climate change is going on that is becoming much more severe. With heat, a country's ability to manage and respond to keep people cool rests on its ability for its electrical system to function. But as part of the Gulf War, the U.S. basically destroyed and bombed the Iraqi electrical system back into the Stone Age. The purpose of that was ultimately to give the U.S. more leverage over Iraq and sanctions that would impose over the course of the 90s to try to essentially beat Saddam Hussein into submission. When the U.S. invaded back in 2003, Iraq's electricity grid and quality of system and infrastructure had improved from where it was in 91 when it was blown out by the Americans, but still was not 100%. The Americans totally brought it back even further into the past. Even today, it's not like power is regularly supplied to everybody in the country. A lot of that is functions of American policy, which goes back 20 years. Sounds about what? So in India, women Indian Army officer to assist PM in unfurling flag on 74th Independence Day. That must be a huge deal. Now they're hitting Chinese firms, but with new hurdles, new imports, probably tariffs and other things and rules. They're decking up for their celebrations during a fucking outbreak of COVID. Netanyahu is congratulating India's leader, which I think is another outright asshole, if I'm not mistaken. so much to be proud of. If you're being told that by him, I don't know. Narendra Modi will unfurl the national flag and deliver a seventh consecutive Independence Day speech from the iconic Red Fort on Saturday. He will also receive the Guard of Honor contingent consisting of one other officer and 24 men from the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Delhi Police. They will assist the Prime Minister in unfurling the national flag. Wow. The Defense Secretary will introduce the General Officer Commanding Delhi Area, Lieutenant General Vijay Kumar Mishra, to the Prime Minister. They will then conduct the Prime Minister to the saluting base where combined inter-services and police guards will present a general salute to him, following which we will inspect the Guard of Honor, Jesus. That's a big deal. The National Flag Guard comprising of 32 men and one officer, each from the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Delhi Police, will present Rashtriya salute at the time of unfurling the national flag. Netanyahu. I have a friend in India, but I think, like, he's not poor, so he doesn't, I don't think he understands why I hate, he likes Donald Trump, I don't get it. So they've been testing for the coronavirus disease in New Delhi. They seem to have dropped from its peak levels, raising questions about whether the capital is lowering its guard too soon in its efforts to contain the pandemic after becoming the first major hotspot in the country to successfully rein the outbreak. Now, they conducted 21,660 daily tests and averaged for the week ending of July 9th, which has been the city's highest record of rate of testing. Now, when are we going to fucking stop this thing? The number of tests done on some days is lower. This is mainly because people do not come to the dispensaries or hospitals. What are they doing to stop? Now, they had one of the highest testing rates in the country. The city has conducted over 63,000 tests per million residents against the national average of 20,778. Now, the first hotspot of the country has successfully reined in the outbreak last month. Until the end of June, the city was reporting over 3,400 cases every day at an average. Now, that's dropped to 1,100. But scaling down testing is not an option for Delhi. The cases remain high. For testing to be scaled down, you should have a positivity rate of 5% or below for a prolonged period of time. Now, the experts are also questioning the city's increase to share antigen or rapid tests, which are not as reliable. They believe that the city should use its spare RT-PCR testing capacity instead of over-relying on antigen tests. Yeah, they need to send them into the lab, really. So over in Nepal, we got landslides over here, leaving dozens scared dead, many missing, homeless. Indians visiting Nepal now have to show their ID cards. Nepalese journalist who reported on Chinese encroachment in Nepal. In Nepal village was found dead. Here we go. Here's some corruption. The 50-year-old journalist's body was found at the banks of the Bagmati River near the hydropower project area in Mandu. Holy shit. Very, very interesting, sir. The Balaram Bania, the Nepalese journalist who reportedly wrote an article on Chinese encroachment in Gru village, has been found dead. Oh, wow. A team was deployed from area police to Bimipidi, fished his body out from a river and sent it to the, looks like, Hatuda Hospital. Bania was last seen walking along the banks of the Bauku River. His location, according to his mobile phone, showed the same, after which the phone was switched off. His family had filed a missing report with the police following the manhunt, which led to his body being found. That's interesting. So So according to the press, he used to cover politics and parliament and later did extensive reporting on governance and bureaucracy. He reportedly wrote an article highlighting the Chinese encroachment in Rui Village, located in the Gorkha Village, district. The journalist's death comes amid the strained bilateral relations between India and Nepal after the Himalayan nation included the Indian territories of Kalapani, Lipuleki? I don't want to say this wrong. It's interesting. I might be able to say this one. The Limpiadura and its controversial new political map. Very interesting language. They have a lot of H's in places. I don't know. Our language is weird, too. Once you learn English first, it's really hard to learn another language unless you're smart. So over in Myanmar, peace process back on track. Yay! Let's see. They also barred the Rohingya candidate from contesting elections. See, everyone's got election fraud or some shit going on. Let's read that. So most Rohingya not considered citizens and will have no vote, living in what Amnesty describes opposite conditions. A Rohingya Muslim has been barred from standing in Myanmar's upcoming election in a decision decried as by rights groups as discriminatory and a symptom of the ongoing genocide against the persecuted minority. In 2017, military operation drove 750,000 Rohingya out of the country into sprawling refugee camps in neighboring Bangladesh, promoting genocide charges at the UN's top court. Myanmar has denied the allegations and justified the military operations as a means of rooting out terrorists. Bullshit. Another 600,000 Rohingya remain in Myanmar, but most are not regarded as citizens and will have no vote, living in what Amnesty International describes, again, opposite conditions. Now, three Rohingya-led parties have hoped to field at least a dozen candidates in November's vote, according to regional watchdog Fortified Rights. But Abdul Rashid, who's 58, a member of the Democracy and Human Rights Party, said, told Fortified Rights, which monitors the situation of the Rohingya minority, that he was denied the right to run for office in Myanmar's forthcoming national elections. The commission said that this was because his parents were not Myanmar citizens when he was born. Rashid said even though he had proof his parents and grandparents were granted citizenship in 1957, 4 years before his birth, they don't want Rohingya in the parliament, and that is the only reason this is happening. Wow. Why are there restrictions for Rohingya? Why is there a separate set of questions for Rohingya? These are my questions. The Sitwe's election commission was not immediately available for comment, of course. Lots going on. Now I have a question. These people that are fleeing coronavirus conditions, what if the neighboring countries sent the parents back and took the kids and put them in fucking camps, you know, prison, jails, like we do in our borders, you know? It doesn't sound very, Christian to me. Actually, you know, it kind of does. They did torture and murder a lot of people because of, you know, smart ideas. And they also raped kids and used them as slaves. Going on in other news, in the Philippines, COVID-19 is an ally for ISIS. And Taiwan's new quarantine rules for Philippine arrivals kick in. Philippines' terror boss is linked to two beheadings of two Canadian people. What? Wow, two Canadians were beheaded, and the guy, I guess he surrendered. Let's see. John Ridsdell of Calgary and fellow Canadian Robert Hall were beheaded by Abu Sayyaf in Sulu in 2016. Well, what were you doing there? He was wounded in a battle in the southern Philippines province of Sulu, so he had surrendered. The separatist commander, Andulujahad Susakan, was taken into custody in the city of Davao. I'm going to call it that, or it's either that or Davao. I don't know. But the Associated Press had reported that he was wanted for at least 23 murders, 6 attempted murders, and 5 kidnappings. He led a network whose members are affiliated with ISIL. The island-hopping group began in 1990s with funding from Al-Qaeda and has been simmering conflict with the state ever since, using kidnapping as one of its main weapons. Now, John Ridsdale of Calgary and fellow Canadian Robert Hall were beheaded by Abu. He was said to have funded their captors from a Davao tourist spot the year before. Hall, 66, originally from Calgary, had a long and varied career as a tradesman and actor, a passionate sailor and globetrotter. He had recently arrived in Davao with the Philippines woman, Marietz Flor. Ridsdale, 68, was born in London, England, but raised in Saskatchewan. A semi-retired mining executive, he shared Hall's love for sailing. Now, they were kidnapped in 2015 from their Davao holiday, Ocean View Marina, a boat resort on Samal Island. And a Canadian permanent resident who built and ran the marina was also taken. They were beheaded. Now, Ridsdale was executed April 2016, and Hall was beheaded in June 2016. But Flor was freed the same month, and Sekingstad, he was released later. So they had more people. They were holding them for unrealistic ransom and demands being asked for by militants and the Canadian government urging families not to pay because due to so risked legitimizing the terrorists. They were forced to tell them farewell, and he was forced to tell his 2 grown daughters before the fucking militants took him away that he loved them. Oh my God. That's crazy. And you know who supports Al-Qaeda? Well, some of it's us. And then the rest, well, you know, Russia, all them. Shit, our soldiers are being killed by Al-Qaeda because, you know, Russia's paying them. So, Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro, I'm sorry, I read that weird. He doesn't deserve me to say his name right, but whatever. Bolsonaro, he's calling the Amazon fires a lie. As rainforests are burning and they're putting up videos. So, yeah. Let's see. He's calling it a lie. I wonder why. Now, they're more devastating than last year's, but the government is denying they even exist. So he called the fires a lie, as photos and videos from the region show the forest burning. Now, fires in the Amazon for a month of August hit a 9-year high in 2019, but this is beyond top track record. Now, we have general strikes and blockades in Bolivia and entering 11 days as protesters condemn basically their election fraud and all the unfair elections going on. And their solution to surging COVID-19 deaths are a mobile crematorium. Bolivia's solution is a mobile crematorium. Wow. Wow. Yeah, wow, Maddie. In Guatemala, we have a French NGO leader killed as he was ambushed. That's great. The Santiago volcano, the pyroclastic flow continues. What? I didn't know. The activity of the volcano has remained essentially unchanged at elevated levels during the past weeks. Wow, block and ash flows continue to descend over the western slopes of the Caliente Dome and eastern slopes. Sometimes phoenix clouds are formed. A week to moderate explosions are generated. Oh, wow. Which reach up to 10,826 to 11,811 feet. Wow, that's crazy. I had no idea. And in El Salvador, a trial in Spain raises hopes for justice for 1989 priest killings in El Salvador. ICE Dallas arrests a fugitive wanting in El Salvador for alien smuggling and fraud. And a man wanted in El Salvador for murder arrested during traffic stop. Wow, lots going on there. Now, a recipe for corruption. Millions of COVID-19 funds flow into El Salvador from the IMF. Bloated budgets and little oversight create the perfect recipe for corruption. Sounds about right. We aren't the only ones. And in good old Canada, Americans go home as tension at Canada and U.S. border continue. They extended their border closure against amid tensions over the restrictions. Now, we don't deserve to be going anywhere. We don't deserve to holiday anywhere where there's brown people either. We need to stay. We don't deserve such things. Coronavirus cases could exceed Canada's healthcare capacity this fall. Justin Trudeau, what are you doing? Two chainsaw-wielding men covered in blood arrested at Canada Beach. Oh, my God. And they're extending the border restrictions into September. They should just fucking extend it just indefinitely. Now, these two dudes march toward beachgoers. The police confirmed on the CBC, or I'm sorry, yeah, I said it right, actually. The officers responded Sunday to reports of a large fight just before 10 a.m. at the beach. The two men involved in the original fight suffered injury before leaving the scene and returning with weapons. A video from the scene shows police arriving and ordering two men to the ground as the men are handcuffed. Police tell them that they will get medical attention. Now, both men were charged with assault, and the chainsaws were not used to inflict any injury. Oh, my God. That's fantastic. And I believe we got all of our news done. As you can see, we have a lot going on here, but we've got a lot of the same things going on everywhere, as it is a trend that, I'm sorry, the generations that are rising up now, we're waking up, and all this corruption and all these authoritarian career politicians and leaders, your reign is over, and either we get it together and fix our planet and fix ourselves and stop this evil, and literally that's what this is, all of this is simply evil, we're not going to live long, and I guess maybe that's the point. But that's the tea, guys, and I'll be back, and I will. I apologize, y'all, I was kind of hit by a frame. So, and things have been pretty intense. So, I will be back over the weekend, and everyone stay safe, your fucking masks, wash your goddamn hands, Black Lives Matter, and racist lives don't. Remember, if you can vote by mail, get it together, and then drive that shit over and hand it to somebody in that bitch, if you got to. Oh, yeah, in Oregon, they are removing postal boxes. And that's because they're trying to keep people from voting. So, remember, guys, drink your school, stay in drugs, and don't do milk. And that's the tea.